Yes, sir.
Open wide. Say ah.
Welcome to another episode of Open Wide Say Ah with myself, Leka Lolas. As you know, this is the podcast all about sex and sex talk and sex positivity and sex education. Today, we are talking all about sex work, and I'm joined by Nosipho from SWET, the Sex Workers Education and Advocacy Task Force in South Africa. Welcome, Nosipho, and thank you for joining us.
Hello, and thank you for having us on this platform and for the fun ways you want to discuss sex work. Most of the time we have to be fighting for rights. It's actually nice to actually just be talking sex positivity and be positive about sex work.
So firstly, I think that sex work is really highly targeted in South Africa, and a lot of sex workers are, you know, part of the most vulnerable group in South Africa. And I think sometimes it comes from miseducation or no education or understanding what sex work actually is, what people are doing, what counts as sex work. Could you give us a little bit on your personal opinion on what sex work actually is?
So for the broader community of sex work, which is within our organization, sex work for us is transaction of sex for monetary gain or transaction for goods, but done by people that are consenting. So already there you can see that we're saying that a person must have had agency to sell sex or to sell sexual experiences. And most of us, when we talk about it, we usually say that, no man, actually we are pleasure executives. Because we're selling pleasure, and really that's what we're selling. We're selling adult entertainment, and that's where a person needs to start understanding this, and also remove kind of the sex from the work, because I think most people want to actually stigmatize sex work because sex is so taboo. First of all, you need to understand that sex is a pleasure. Sex is a right. We all have the right to erotic justice. And that's where you must place it first, right? So you remove the taboo, you're removing the stigma. And then you must realize that, okay, now there are people who are actually willing and want to give pleasure to other people for money. Hence the work.
I really like pleasure executive because it gives agency to the person that is selling any services, or that, you know, it puts the power in the person that's providing pleasure. And in South Africa, it is, you know, it's criminalized and illegal to buy sex as well as to sell sex or sell any type of pleasure services. And I saw online there's this great word that's used, hierarchy. So the hierarchy of sex work or pleasure work, you know, because I think it's so stigmatized. And so, you know, we look at who is at the highest risk and who is violated the most. And I mean, we have sex workers and webcammers, phone sex operators, cyber sex services. You can sell nudes on OnlyFans or on other sites. You can be an escort, you can give physical trades, but also some people, you know, marry for the exchange of sex and a house, or, you know, they get airtime for the exchange of photos. So it's not just this on-street physical trade of pleasure and of sex.
And then that's the truth, and the reality is that because we live in a society that criminalized sex work, right? Where our cultures and our traditions actually enforced a form of a stigma to sex work. People tend to have a stereotype of what a sex worker is, right? So they're waiting for somebody who's standing on the street, probably on drugs, probably having a pimp who's beating them up. They have this whole idea of a sex worker. And in reality, sex work is exactly what you're talking about. You have people that trade their sexual pleasure for a house, for a wedding, for marriage, for their kids to have comfort if they have got children, right? And then you have the street-based sex worker, and then you have all of these things that you've just calculated, you've just actually talked about. But once you actually get to a part where it's not stereotypical to a person, most people tend to dismiss those. So it's okay if somebody's doing webcamming, but it's not okay for somebody to be doing street-based sex work. And I think that's where people need to realize that this is one industry, and all of these people are selling sex or pleasure in one way or another, and we all have to just respect that one person chooses to do it this way. And sometimes, yes, it is a hierarchy, but sometimes it's not really a hierarchy. It's just people choose how they want to work. It's the adult entertainment industry. Like in entertainment, some people become poets, some people become drummers, some people become musicians. It's the same with sex work.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you also, not everyone is great at everything. You know, like I might be great at webcamming and I'm really not good at, you know, photographing my body in a certain way, but I'm also much better in person. So physical work is going to be my spot, you know.
Yes.
Do you count yourself as a sex worker? Do you do sex work?
Yes, I'm a sex worker. Okay. I'm a sex worker, and I'm one of those people who can say that I've actually tried all avenues. So I've done the street-based, loved it. There's a lot of unity on the street. The fact that when you actually get a client, somebody's seeing you, somebody sees the car registration if you're living with that client, or if you're booking into a nearby hotel, they can actually tell that's where you went. For me, it builds a sort of a comfort and a safer working environment because you have these people that are watching out for you. I've also worked from hotels where I put up my own ads on certain platforms. And I didn't quite enjoy it as much as the street-based, where you can actually joke about certain things and where you can actually talk to somebody if something wrong happens, you know, because you're in isolation, you're sitting in a hotel room, you're waiting on 10 phones to be ringing and the client to be coming through, but nobody really can keep track of those clients besides yourself. But other people prefer that, obviously, for privacy reasons. And some people prefer it because it's less stigmatized. And then I've also done the whole brothel scene.
I think it's great to be speaking to someone that actually has a lot of experience and, you know, is speaking from the in, not speaking to sex work as someone, you know, from the outside. So thank you for sharing that. And like, you know, for me, back in varsity days, I used to like do secret types of trade of sex work because I was so scared that anyone's going to find out. And now that I'm doing kind of online sex work, the only way for me to make money and to get fans and to get followers and get people to support is to tell people. But at the same time, it's so stigmatized that everyone is going, aren't you afraid that if people find out, you're not going to get taken seriously, you're not going to get other work opportunities, and, you know, like people are going to judge you and kind of see you as unprofessional. Have you experienced that? Have you been like cut out of stuff because people have been made aware of your sex work?
So I wouldn't necessarily place it on myself, but we've had instances where online people have actually contacted our legal defense center to put up cases like that because now people saw their porn video on Pornhub or somewhere and they want to cut them out of work opportunities. They want to cut them out of their family, of their children's lives. You find cases where a person, if they are a parent, for instance, and they are known to work, but nobody has really inquired what work is, right? They are happy because all of these big monies are coming through to support the family. They're taking their children to private schools. They're taking all the best of the Model C schools. They are putting their sisters through university. They're supporting the family in all sorts of ways. They're happy with the money, but then somebody finds the video of them doing sex work online, or they find some sort of evidence to show that they're sex workers. And this person is all of a sudden going through not being given the rights to see their children almost being given to almost social development and social workers. And we've had cases where we had to retract kids to say, but why are you taking away the kid when the kid is fully supported? And they would base it on, no, because it's sex work, this person is doing sex work, and that's not really a basis to remove a child from their parent.
You know, you touched on something like really important, that due to stigma and people not understanding what sex work is, and if it is disclosed to your family, what type of, you know, impact that can have so quickly. I'm also like, I'm honest, I'm also really afraid that, you know, people are going to screen grab my stuff and show my family, or screen grab my stuff and send it around to friends. And, but I've also made peace that that is what I've consented to, and I'm taking agency over my body, and it's what I want to do. I wanted to ask, what exactly does Sweat do, and what is Sweat pushing for, you know, regarding protection and decriminalizing of sex work?
Okay, so Sweat has been advocating for over 20 years for the decriminalization and full decriminalization of sex work, which is a legislation that allows for removal or repealing of laws that criminalize sex work. This would be selling sex work, buying sex work, living off the proceeds. But more importantly, it puts in then protective laws. So for instance, if it is seen as work, then sex workers could actually fall under the labor laws. They could be allowed to work in groups and actually open up their own flats and register them as a form of a trade or company or small cooperatives, which makes it safer, a safer working environment. And also we are asking government to just, because also when you're looking at these laws, is laws that started from 1957, right? And it was really a way to police women's bodies. So it is another way for us to say, can government and can the state stop policing women's bodies so much? If a person is allowed to do any form of trade in this country, then one can use the same body that would have been mining to actually sell pleasure.
Decriminalizing sex work will mean that, you know, the agency and the laws are not coming from the police and not coming from like law officers. It also means that you'll lower the gender-based violence statistics, you'll get mm-hmm. better access to healthcare. So mm-hmm. overall, it seems like the way to go. Is government leaning more towards legalization of sex work, or are they actually coming on board with decriminalizing?
So it depends on which lens you are actually looking at. When you're looking at processes that are followed to change legislation in this country, 2007, they started the South African Law Reform Commission's investigation processes, which meant submissions, consultation with sex workers in order to come back with the recommendation of what legislation should be taken by South Africa. But unfortunately, the stigma or the discrimination we're talking about, and the moralism that comes when you actually put things like sex work to people, meant that we got a biased report that leans towards rehabilitation and partial criminalization, meaning that they would criminalize the client and give sex workers a rehabilitation kind of framework to work within, which is basic skills in sewing, leather making, beading, whatever. Of course, this is not what sex workers had wanted, because when they were consulted, they asked for full decriminalization, right? But because the report was written by human beings who come from the society that we just talked about, who come with their morals, who come with their stigma, who come with their own internalized discrimination towards sex workers, they excluded all of that, what sex workers had asked for. So now we sit with a Department of Justice report that pushes towards partial criminalization rights. But then you look at other things like so President Cyril Ramaphosa, before he was president, he said within SENEC, as the deputy president, and SANEC is the South African National AIDS Council. And part of his job there, or his mandate, was to release a national strategic plan on HIV for key populations, which has a separate element of sex workers. And when he released this report, he said, no, he's actually gotten to consult and see sex workers so much while working on this national strategic plan that he is instead gonna be the one to advocate and ask that sex workers be given full decriminalization of sex work in South Africa, because it is within the constitutional rights and it is within our constitutional framework. And that's the legislation that fits right into this country. And then you have the deputy minister of police going to Amsterdam and announcing that he will not have resources from his own department used so uselessly to track sex workers while actually stopping them from accessing sexual reproductive rights, right? Because police take away the condoms and use those as evidence when arresting sex workers. And he said he's going to be an advocate for decriminalization of sex work, right? So you keep on having these levels where some people are like, yes, we want decriminalization of sex work, and we understand that it's constitutional. We understand that it would mean agency, it would mean labor rights, safer working environment, access to health, access to justice, accountability within the justice system as well, should the perpetrators be law enforcers, right? Mm. But then you have the pushback from those who are still really just holding on to morals.
I think that within South Africa and within like the Labor Department, if government is able to, you know, say that they are going to back decriminalizing sex work, that it needs to be put at the forefront and needs to be prioritized. It's been quite a long time that SWET has been pushing for, you know, advocating for sex work to be decriminalized.
Yes.
So what can the public do to kind of like elevate the pressure and to kind of support and to advocate with SWET?
If society find themselves in spaces where people, for instance, are talking about sex workers in a derogatory way, right? So for instance, here in South Africa, the sex worker movement has asked precisely not to be called prostitutes. And it because this name of prostitute carries a lot of bad connotations, right? And we're asking for people to correct that. That's the first step, minor step from anybody who's in society. Once you hear this word, you correct the person. Actually, sex workers in South Africa prefer sex work because they understand that they're using their agency to do work in the sex industry. That's number one. If you are doing any kind of work that is civil society based, I think one of the best things that you can actually do is give us position papers. We're also looking for position papers from institutions and other civil society organizations to say that this is the law that they actually want to support as civil society organizations or institutions. If you are an academic, we're always looking for people to come and help us drive our advocacy with evidence, which means if you were thinking of a research idea that could push decriminalization and show government the evidence that this is actually needed, you're more than welcome to contact SWET or contact Sisonke, the sex worker national movement. Or you can, if you are an individual, you're an institution, you can also join ASIJIGI. ASIJIGI is a coalition of partner organizations and allies who support decriminalization and do advocacy, whether in your own individual stance or whether as an institution for decriminalization of sex work.
Okay. I mean, SWET is doing the most and has been doing the most. It's always been like, you know, I think every organization event that I've gone to with NGOs, I feel like SWET is out there, you know. From your perspective, like, what has been good or bad? Like, during COVID times, like, what does sex work kind of look like for you or for people that you're supporting? You know, and how have you, like, adapted to kind of carry on your work but be limited by COVID?
So because COVID was a virus or a virus that was contracted through closeness with people. We actually advised all sex workers in this country through publications, speaking through creative spaces, which is a safe space that we hold with sex workers, through our ambassadors, through the different offices in the provinces. We had advised sex workers to stay away from sex work. First, it was the hard lockdown, and people were really struggling because they have bills to pay. And most of them did not exactly fall under the category where they could go to the UIF, for instance, and get some sort of compensation, workers' compensation. And this was really hard because had government been had given us like 10 years back, decriminalization and sex work was seen as work, people would have been so much more able to actually deal with this pandemic. They would have just walked into a UIF office and like every other worker gotten their compensation and be able to pay their bills and take care of their families. But you had people that could not, some of them can't even open bank accounts because of criminalization. They need to prove where they're working for them to get that. So you had people like that who sat now with no real savings and they had families to take care of. School fees still needed to be paid. They still needed to pay rent because we are talking about people that make sometimes more than the average minimum waging person. And it was a hard time. How we got through that was really through the support of society and partner organizations who gave us a lot of donations so that we can support people on the ground. There was a backup buddy that was run. And with the backup buddy, we were able to give 704 adults relief. This is in the form of food vouchers or food itself, and 939 children of sex workers. Out of that, 70 of those adults were actual migrant sex workers who were stuck in this country, and some of them live in brothels, were taken out by their employer. We don't call it employer, but they were taken out by their employer because clients could no longer come and actually get services. So we were able to assist them through that way. But it really hit us hard, and it really showed us the need for sex work to be seen as work in this country.
I mean, I can imagine because if it's not regarded as work, how's it going to be regarded as, you know, like an essential service or a supported service at all? And everything kind of, it seems like all the laws work against sex workers.
Yes.
And yeah, I just find it quite sad. Was there any type of support or look or training at getting more sex workers online or looking at webcams or videos or video sessions or photographs, because it comes with access of having a laptop and having internet and having a training of how to use it and how to do webcamming. It's not that basic.
We did introduce it. It was something that was introduced to people, and we did do a little bit of research into what kind of platforms people could be getting at. But like you say, unfortunately, we are in South Africa, and most people, a day-to-day person who's now out of a job, can't afford data. So people were talking about, but what is it going to do for my data? How am I going to get a laptop? Okay, now I've got a laptop, but then I still need a cam. It's just too much for me to do right now while I don't have an income already. So you found that some sex workers did join, but mostly because of access, some people were not able to.
I mean, I fully understand. I am privileged enough to have access to a laptop. I don't always have Wi-Fi, but a laptop camera is not always the best to, like, you know, capture yourself on and to put yourself out there when people are doing, you know, all the most, they're doing all the tricks. They've got the best gear. They've got the best lighting, and you're competing with people on that platform. But I think sex work has kind of changed and grown massively, and provided also like massively economically online, in the world, and has become more known and more recognized during this time because like OnlyFans has grown now like immensely, and everyone is talking about what a sex work look like. But I think I just wanted to have this conversation with someone that is doing the groundwork and is, you know, working to protect sex workers. Because yes, in America and in Amsterdam, you can have these great ideas and you can be earning massive money, but you're more protected there. We're not protected here. And yes, those sex workers are not working online in South Africa.
And just while you're on that note, I'm glad that you're talking OnlyFans, right? Because we've been looking at OnlyFans. So it would be nice if people are actually doing online sex work. Should they ever come to a point where they're getting put out of the platform? I don't know how to phrase it in English. Because apparently OnlyFans is now not wanting anybody to identify themselves as a seller of sex, seller of pleasure, seller of any of these things. It's seen as taboo when people are getting chased out of the platforms. If people do get chased out, we would actually love them to actually contact Sweat. There's a global movement of sex workers that are fighting really hard for that platform to remain a place of safety and a place of for people to earn a living. Please, if people are doing that, are doing the OnlyFans and they get chased, kicked out because they sold a picture that had certain words, can they please contact us?
That's really great to know. I think that, you know, there was this massive case with Bella Thorne where she's like a famous actress and used her fans to come onto OnlyFans to join and to pay, you know, pay a subscription. And then she sent in your inbox, you get like in your DMs, you get a feature where you sell a picture or a video for however much you want. And in order for someone to unlock it, they have to pay first. So she sold, I think she made over $1 million of selling this video that said, you know, watch me fuck myself and like a nude, nude photos.
Wow.
And everyone paid. And the site crashed because everyone asked for their money back because she wasn't doing what she said she was doing in her description. She was just in her underwear posing. And then OnlyFans set out these laws that, you can now only ask for your money return takes up to like a month to pay out. And they also put up a limit of how much you can charge in your DMs for. So that means that the maximum is now $50, where it used to be, it was limitless. You could charge like $1,000. And then they also started looking at how many people are on the site that are trading sex, because that's apparently where their most issues are lying. And all of a sudden, you know, all these laws were put now against sex workers that were making OnlyFans actually successful and making OnlyFans rich. Now everything is against them. And you're no longer getting, you're no longer getting a payment out every week. You now get a payment out at the end of the month. So without any warning, sex workers are now finding themselves on OnlyFans earning a lot less money, having to sell videos of maybe, you know, a lot of work that you put into this video and you're doing quite a lot in the video for $50, which is 750 rand. It's a very little money, you know. And like that's your maximum that you're charging for, and you have to wait a whole month for it. Where if you were getting, let's say, 2,000 rand a week, that's what you're making every week. You're used to that money. Now you're only getting all the money at the end of the month. People are sitting, you know, facing big crises. And I think that they did a massive injustice to sex workers and to online sex workers, because some famous woman who really doesn't need the money made the site crash.
It is a bit unfair.
Yeah, I think it's great that if people are getting kicked out because they are sex workers, which the site was created for, to now actually make a global campaign against that.
And there is. So if people are facing that, please holler at us. We do have people on the national hotline 24/7, but you can also just send an email on info@sweat.org.za.
If people are wanting to get in contact to make donations, is that also where they reach out to?
you can reach there, or you can look for the Backer Buddy page. That we do have a campaign, an online campaign there. We do have a mother supporting campaign that is on Quickit as well. So we have different aspects to this. This is general COVID relief, and then we have a special one that focuses on mothers and their children. That one is on Quickit.
Thank you so much, Nosipho, for just giving context of what sex work is, you know, facing in South Africa, sex workers, and what sex work looks like. And speaking from the context of a sex worker as well as an activist for sex workers. So thank you.
Thank you for hosting me.
Yes, sir.
Open wide.